In order to keep bringing you guys tons of free content, we work with brand partners who you'll hear from in this episode, including an advertisement from Zopa Bank. Welcome back to another episode of the Talk 20s podcast. Today, I'm joined by founder and CEO of Mallows Beauty, Laura Mallows. After starting her business with a £6,000 credit card balance, her business is now set to make £7 million this year. But aside from those numbers, her business solves a problem that many of us spend a lot of time worrying about in our 20s and beyond, loving the skin that we're in. In this episode, we chat about the making of Mallows Beauty, but also about how we can make steps to love ourselves a little bit more. So buckle in for another amazing episode. And whilst you're at it, hit that subscribe or follow button so you can come along with us for the ride. So hello, Laura. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks. I am so excited to chat to you today. You've come all the way up from Cardiff as well, which is not a short train journey to Liverpool, is it?
No, it's like 9 hours on a train today.
Oh my God, the commitment. But you did say that you got loads of work done on your train, actually.
So. Yeah, so productive. I think that like having no one around me to ask questions and like just being on the phone, and I like kind of, I don't know, sitting at a desk doesn't work for me. My brain doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So being on a train, like my brain is like, it's productive. It's been a good day.
Great. Yeah. Well, I love that view. But I feel that kind of alludes a little bit to like the whole Mallows Beauty conversation. And we're going to go into like a massive deep dive of the business and everything about you, because I feel like what you've built in such a short space of time is truly impressive. Like, and I think you should be, well, super like proud of yourself. If you don't, I know as business owners, we rarely like remember to like pat ourselves on the back, but you like should be super proud. But I feel like for our listeners, they probably want to hear the story of like how it all came about. Where did it start? Where did you have this idea? What's your background before you even started? So let's dive in. Like, let's give us a bit of an overview of how you got started with Mallows Beauty. How was it born?
Because it's a long story, so strap
I'm ready. I'm strapped in.
So I lived in London. I was a buyer for June. I absolutely loved my job, and I decided to move home. My flat was like moldy, and I was painting an arm and leg for it in London, and there was like slugs in the bath and stuff, and I was like, right, I want to go home, I want to get a house, I want to you know, just like grow up. It felt like growing up a little bit. And I got a job as a skincare buyer. And I'd always been obsessed with skincare because I had acne in London, and I tried everything, like expensive dermatologists, everything from the GP, and nothing seemed to work. So I became obsessed with kind of like researching different ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I got a job as a skincare buyer, and I knew a lot about skincare. I was literally there for like 20 days. My boss was just horrible. And they were,
well, that's when you got back home.
Yeah. And didn't listen to any of my ideas, like didn't trust me to do anything. And I was like, right, do you know what? I think I can do this better for myself. So I kind of quit after 20 days. I made a bold decision. I think I was like, my parents have always been my biggest cheerleader. I went for dinner with them, and they were like, okay, you've got all these amazing ideas, just do it. What's on your back? Here's our credit card, here's 6K, see what you can do with it. So I was like, okay, like lucky. I'm very fortunate to have, you know, very supportive parents. I know not everyone is as fortunate. And I quit my job, and very daunting. And then the world ended and COVID happened about a month or 6 weeks afterwards. And I thought I'd made the complete and utter worst decision of my life. But I think I was actually really inspired by podcasts, and I was listening to like so many podcasts, and I'm literally obsessed with Deliciously Ella, and I've always been obsessed with her. Yeah. And she's just been a massive role model for me. And I don't know, everyone around me always said, you know, you should start a company making handbags for June, and you've always got these amazing ideas. And my collections, I did a fashion design in uni, and that was really successful. Vogue picked it up, Vogue Italia picked it up afterwards, and everyone all around me was always saying you should do business. And I never really got that like feeling in my gut, the butterflies of yes. And I'd start a business, I'd come up with ideas and samples, and I was never like, it never really excited me enough. Mm-hmm. Until I kind of like was at this company, and I was like, oh my God, there's so many things that they, you know, they started out sourcing to China, but everything was made in the UK. And I thought that was a major mistake, because it was such a USP and something so unique that they were just kind of thrown away. I just kind of just did it. And I was getting more and more excited that I found a graphic designer. And I was thinking about all the things that skincare meant to me. Well, actually, skincare made me feel really insecure about myself, because all these massive companies always promoting like perfect women with flawless skin and flawless bodies. And actually, even as a size, at the time I was like size 8 girl, blonde hair, like pretty much definition of like normal or whatever you want to call normal. And I still didn't feel good enough in my own skin. I was kind of thinking like, there must be so many more of people out there, women like me, who feel so insecure and not good enough. And is that because we're all comparing ourselves to these like magazine models that have been airbrushed and photoshopped? And, you know, I was as a shoot and there was a model with acne, and I remember thinking, oh my God, she's got the same skin as me. How amazing. It means I'm normal. I'm not ugly. I'm not whatever, all those horrible thoughts you have. And then when the shoot came out, it was airbrushed and photoshopped, and she looked like, you know, like she had nothing, no flaw in sight. And I was so upset and angry. And I thought, you know what? What if a skincare company was talking about what skincare can actually do? You know, that breakouts are normal. Stretch marks, totally normal. Cellulite, totally normal. You can't cure cellulite through products. That's just impossible. And talked about the realities of skincare and real skin and promoted that instead of making us all feel so inadequate all the time because of these people that weren't even real. The people we were comparing ourselves weren't even real. And it was kind of before a time that, you know, like body positivity and skin positivity is massive on Instagram and social media right now. Like, there's so many influencers and people talking about it, which is amazing. But it wasn't 3.5 years ago, even though it doesn't sound that long ago, it wasn't such a big deal. And it definitely wasn't skincare companies who were saying this, you know, it's okay not to be perfect and perfect isn't real. I was laughed at so many times when I was saying my ideas to people, you know, like loan companies and even my friends or family. Some of them were like, you can't start a skincare company saying that spots are normal. How are you going to sell anything? And I was a bit, you know, okay, yeah, I get it. How am I going to sell skincare if I'm saying that spots are normal? But I was like, come on, there's a line, you know, skincare can improve our skin. The skincare can do amazing things, but also it doesn't make you look like, it's not makeup, or even makeup doesn't make you look completely, absolutely flawless and perfect. Like, that isn't achievable. That's not real. And, you know, I, as a young girl, like at the time, wanted to step out of my house and feel confident just the way I was. So that was kind of the reasons. And I've always kind of struggled with like body image issues. And I think so many of us have, right? Some of us have that memory of a boy in our class that said something to us. Like for me, when I was, I think I was in like just gone to secondary school, and a boy was like, why are your thighs bigger than your friends? And I remember being like, I don't know. Why are they bigger? You know, and being obsessed with everything I ate, and and it just possessed me. And still to this day, well, maybe not to this day, but I still for a long time would go look in the mirror and the first thing I'd see was my thighs. And for me, like going through life and having anxiety and not really knowing what it was, and still always striving to be perfect. Even to this day, I still have to have conversations with myself. Like, that's not achievable. Perfect isn't real. Like, I'm still telling myself that all the time because I'm such a perfectionist and I'm so hard on myself. I've lost the complete train of where I was going with that conversation. So self-love. And I think that, I don't know, my life would have been so much easier and better if I'd have just loved myself a little bit more and I just appreciated like who I was and didn't always want to be someone else, or not be someone else, or be a better version of myself. Mm-hmm. And I think because my whole life, you know, I look back and I think I made really bad decisions. Like, I've had some horrendous like decisions that I've made because I had poor self-esteem. And I think that was all because of everything that was funneled towards me. You know, okay, social media wasn't so big when we were growing up, but magazines were massive. What our parents said, our grandparents said, like, I remember my grandparents being on constant diets. Like, that was just a thing, you know? And what the boys were saying, because they were looking at girls in magazines and probably thinking, well, why doesn't she look like that girl in a magazine? So it was not really their fault either, because they were being subjected to the same stuff that we were. I've always wanted to do something that had like a good impact. Like, you know, I'm not money motivated. That doesn't motivate me at all. I'd say that I like working hard and I like achieving things and I like being successful. I've always wanted to be the person that got full marks in my exam. Like, and that's always driven me, but I've always wanted to do something better or for the and having a business that kind of did both, that was talking about these things that I thought were so important, especially in a world of social media, and having a little girl now, you know, it must be even harder growing up with, you know, I mean, like I love Kim Kardashian, but also like her body is just like, it's, she looks like a doll, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's fillers and everything, like, is so easily accessible. So it's even easier to make real people look perfect now from social media. So it's going to be even harder for people growing up. So I feel like
that's very true, actually, for the next generation.
Yeah. So I feel like I had a responsibility to just make a cut through that and just talk about what is to be real, and just get, like, we live once, like, shouldn't, and we're all so obsessed with appearance and how we're perceived and how we look. And okay, yeah, I own a skincare brand, but there's a balance there, right? Yeah. I'm gone off on a massive tangent. I'm so sorry. I don't even know what you asked me.
The first thing I was
gonna
say,
what's your name? And I'm like, hey, cool. So
I love this, but I think this just goes to show how passionate you are about what it is that you could do, that you could literally talk about it for days and days and days, because that's the reason why we wanted to have you on the Talk 20s podcast, because it's so important that we kind of, a lot of us in our 20s are looking for businesses that are trying to do good, not just take our money.
I feel
like that's really what you're trying to build with Mallow's Beauty, but that isn't an easy task. Like, you're not old either. Like, I can't believe that you have achieved all of this by where you are at now. Thanks. And I know you're laughing and chuckling because you're like, oh, I feel like, because you're not technically in your 20s.
I know. I'm a phony.
She's not a phony.
Can I be 29?
But some of this is like, you have achieved, like, you did do all of this like in your kind of late 20s. And I think that is an amazing achievement. You have a whole team now of people. And I kind of really want to dive into the whole side of this as being obviously the CEO of Mallow's Beauty. I know that you started out with a reason, like a why, like a need to kind of do this, which you've just kind of explained there. Thinking of buying a car? Then keep listening to hear more from our sponsor, Zopa Bank. Buying a car can be a big financial commitment, so sometimes you need a helping hand. Zopa Car Finance offers different ways to finance your next set of wheels. There are two options. Option one, hire purchase or HP. If you want to own your car outright at the end of the term and drive unlimited miles, this allows you to pay off the cost of the car in equal installments plus interest. And then there's option two, which is personal contract purchase or PCP. This means much lower monthly payments plus interest, but you have the choice at the end to either hand back the car, trade it in, or pay a lump sum, also known as a balloon payment, to buy the car. With this option, there is an annual mileage limit where you may be fined if you go over. To check out more about what's right for you, search Zopa Car Finance. We have to let you know that the HP representative APR is 13.9% and the PCP representative APR is 11.9%. Vehicle criteria and terms and conditions apply. Like, what have you learned? Let's talk about the skincare side of things before we dive into the business side of things. What have you learned about skincare that you want to share with your audience? So, like, for example, I'm someone, I've recently really started struggling with, like, acne all around my chin. And I can't even, like, stop it. It's so frustrating. And I just don't even know what to do. But it's making me not feel like I want to go on the podcast, and I really want to cover it up. It's making me super self-conscious. Yeah. And I know there's probably so many people out there that have some kind of skin, you know, whether it's too oily or too dry or blemishes or whatever. What have you learned about skincare that you would want to share?
It's more like, what have you learned about skin? Like, skin is, I mean, I get breakouts. I still get breakouts all the time. Mm. Like, and I think for me, I'll have like 6 months a year where I have like amazing skin. And then I'll go through a patch. At the moment, I'm having like a really bad breakout all the time. Mm. And I think that, like, it's okay. It's okay to have a breakout. Like, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're not beautiful, or like that you shouldn't come and show up. And like, how many people are you inspiring on your podcast? Do you know what I mean? And I can't even see your breakout. Like, obviously you're thinking about it.
It's a good day today, everyone. We're all right.
Yeah.
It's okay.
But yeah, I totally get it, because I mean, talking about like learning about skincare aside, like the whole conversation of me, I didn't want to go to work when I had breakouts, and I tried so many creams that my skin was burnt off, and I'd have to call in sick for a week because I was like, I can't put makeup on and my skin's purple, so I can't go into a meeting in the fashion industry looking like this. But yeah, I mean, skin is like ever changing. What something might have worked won't work again. It's complicated, it's complex. Like,
how much of it is related to the stuff that you put on your face, and then also how much of it is related to like hormones and stuff like that? Like, Because I always think, like, especially with skincare, like how you said you've been to the doctor, you've been to this, like how much can a product do for your skin?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything is linked. It's, you know, your stress, your diet, your what, like even how much you're touching your face, mm-hmm. how when did you disinfect your phone? Did you wash your bed sheets? Like your makeup brushes, down to, you know, like intolerances. You don't, there's so much, like, and there's so much out there as well, like, you know, antibiotics and creams and retinols and things that may work for you and may not. Like, it's, the skin is the largest organ in our body. And it's so complex, it's so different for everyone. And I would say that, from in an acne way, I think it's different to any other skin condition. Like, there's loads of skin conditions like ingrowns and capy and strawberry legs, which my products are incredible for, like, mm-hmm. tackling, and they're a lot easier to handle. Acne is, it's complex, and it changes, like, hormone wise. Like,
yeah.
You know, when I was pregnant and, like, I'd say a year afterwards, like, there was patches where actually when I was pregnant, when I had horrendous skin, but then, like, beautiful skin. Mm. And that's all hormone related, mm-hmm. right?
But so, it's yeah. mad how much of an impact this has on us.
It's mad how much of an impact it has on our mental health.
Yeah.
That actually people... So I had someone come up to me and they were like, but spots aren't normal. You can't say they're normal because they're not normal. And that, you know, they are... You know, they're perceived as dirty. There must be something wrong if you've got spots. There's a hormone imbalance, or you're not doing something right. And I'm like, well, no, I've had spots for like I started when I was like 25. So that's like 6 years I've had spots now. So it is my normal, actually. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've learned to manage. Retinols are amazing for my skin. When I don't use them, I break out. So I have to be like really consistent with my retinols. And that's the thing actually I was worried about when I got pregnant, because you can't use retinols when you're pregnant. Mm. And I was like, shit, I'm going to have horrendous skin. But actually the hormones would then make my skin perfect. So it's fine. But yeah, retinoids like really, really work for me. Mm. And my pineapple enzyme range, even though now I've been using it for like 3.5 years, the smell of pineapple is like, you know, I'm like...
Because you go into the warehouse.
I'm like, literally like, smell pineapple every day. So I was like, oh, we're going to do another pineapple body scrub. I'm like, can we do a new scent?
Yeah.
Because I've smelled it for 3.5 years and I want to do... Then, let's do strawberry. Can we release it strawberry skincare, please? I get so excited about products. But like, yeah, it's like there's some... And like, there's like certain things that you find that just like really work for you, you know?
So I'd love to dive in a little bit more to the business side of things. Now, you said in your intro that initially you started the business with £6,000 credit card that was your credit limit, that was your mum and dad's.
My mum's. My mum gets so angry when you say mum and dad's.
Okay, so your like, mum's.
She's yeah. like, it was mine.
So like how? Because first of all, you've got that, you know, that's not like credit is not real money at the same time as well. So you would have had to have paid that back.
Yeah.
So like how did that all come about? And how did you get to this point? Because I think I read in a news article valued at 5 million now.
No, we hopefully will finish this year on five million revenue.
Turnover. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
So how do you go from £6,000 in credit to £5 million turnover?
It's been a roller coaster, let's say that. I think when I started, I found a graphic designer, had all these amazing ideas, and you know, went off and found supplies. I didn't want to use any of the supplies that we were using for my previous company. Mm. So that was kind of my mission, and kind of developing some amazing products. But then the world ended, right? And
pretty much.
I was watching the news and saw that people were running out of hand sanitizer in China. And I thought, interesting. So if that's happening in China and it's coming over here, then we will need hand sanitizer here. My dad owned a distillery, so he had loads of alcohol. So I was like, I've got a great idea, right? Dad, sell me some of your alcohol and I will speak to my skincare companies and fillers and we'll turn the alcohol into hand sanitizer. And he was like, yeah, sure, whatever. You can have some alcohol. Like, didn't think...
Sorry, how did you even come up with that idea? Like, for a starter, because my brain would not compute like alcohol to this, that. I don't know why, but it like...
Yeah.
That's quite entrepreneurial in itself.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah, because I don't really talk about it because I don't want people to think that, like, because it's weird, it's a weird sidestep, right? Talking about hand sanitizer, but I think, yeah, I am proud of like how fast I kind of thought about it.
Yeah.
My dad then stole the idea, so we'll go on to that. But so I was like, right, so I'm just going to buy some alcohol off you,
yeah,
turn it into hand sanitizer. And he was like, yeah, yeah, cool, no problem. And then he was like, oh, actually, we can make it here because no one's buying alcohol and we've got these big vats, so we could probably do it cheaper and then you can just fill it. And that was the conversation. So I think we were one of the first distilleries in the UK to kind of get the WHO approved and HMRC approved hand sanitizer recipe. So we were one of the first to do it. And then we both started selling at the same time. And me and my dad are very, very similar people. We're highly competitive. So yeah, I mean, he ended up in the end, I think he made like 3 million bottles for like the police services. And wow. Him and my brother, and my brother was then awarded a medal by the king for the services they did in hand sanitizer.
Oh my gosh.
From my idea. Okay. So it was my idea, but they ran
Where's
with it.
Where's your medal?
Literally. We all applied, like me, dad and Reese, and Reese got chosen apparently. So I don't know, like, you know, like, mm-hmm. whatever. Not bitter at all. If he got invited to the coronation.
Oh my gosh.
Wild, right?
What?
Wild.
He's now like dancing with the king.
Yeah, I know. Anyway.
All for a bit of sanitizer.
All from me.
All from your idea.
He owes me. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, so I like, obviously my idea was so different to theirs. You know, I wanted fragrances, it to be like really fun packaging and have like positive messaging on it. So I actually spoke to Skinny Dip. Do you know Skinny Dip?
Yeah.
Sold them like 25,000 units and then it just kind of went like wild. Our hand sanitizer, because it was like really premium, went into like Harrods Pharmacy. I was on a TV shopping channel. Like, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get enough plastic bottles. In the end, me and dad were arguing over alcohol. He wouldn't sell me enough because he was using it for his own means, and I was like, definitely this is my idea and we agreed that you're going to be selling me alcohol, but cool. I think we only did that for like 4 or 5 months, and then the skincare was ready to start launching and I just reinvested that into skincare. But I was the only one, I think, in Wales to supply to care homes, so I just like sold at cost all the care homes, and they still send me like thank you emails now because they were like totally forgotten about.
So
they were crazy times.
Can I ask a question? How much of your experience in buying has helped you with this? Because I think for people who are a novice, like in business and stuff like that, all these deals, 25,000 units, that's a lot of money when you start talking about these things. And
I mean, it was crazy.
Like production lines and all this kind of stuff, and even negotiating deals. I know it's all family and stuff like this. Yeah. How much of it is like, I guess you already know because you've got family that can teach you this stuff. And how much of it do you think was like from your career and like buy-in?
So I'd say that my whole career set me up for this, which is like crazy. Like having a fashion design degree, they're tough on you. Like fashion design degree is not the same as a normal degree. Like I literally worked 12 hours a day, did all-nighters like every single week. Like, you know, if your piece wasn't good enough, it would be thrown out. And you'd work for weeks and weeks and weeks on, it would be binned and that would be it. And you had to develop a very tough, hard skin, thick skin. And I think, you know, there was a level, a standard that actually when I came out of my fashion design degree and I went into the fashion industry, I was like, wow, this is easier than my degree. Like, they're so nice. Like, what's going on, you know? So I do feel like I was really prepared for like working in the fashion industry. But yeah, I think like the creativity and I think one of the things that I do well is that I'm super creative, but also commercial. And I have like two sides of my brain.
I can see that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I got a job as a designer after uni, but it was just fulfilling that creative side of me and I wasn't feeling fulfilled. I have to have both. If I'm just doing like really commercial business stuff, I'm not satisfied. Like my brain is, I have to do both. Like I'm an ideas person and I like creating things and creating products. But then I like the business side as well. But then, working at June, like the experience I had and the exposure, like I was given so much trust and responsibility to buy million-pound departments. And from day one, I was given departments to manage. And I think I was promoted like literally every 6 months. Like they were really amazing and really supportive. I had a fantastic manager who taught me so much. So yeah, I think when I came to run my own business, there was a lot of things that I had, I knew, you know, I knew how to work with suppliers, negotiate things,
but that's build ranges.
Like there was a lot of things that I could do. I say the things that I didn't know how to do were like the kind of logistic operational things. Mm-hmm. Like when we were packing hand sanitizer, it's like silly things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you have to learn to, I don't know what the word is, my brain's gone, but like plan your pallets and your boxes, because actually you can't have the certain amount of weight from every pallet up, because you'll start crushing the bottom ones. And if you've got gift boxes and all your money, by the time you go, it'll look fine when it's leaving the warehouse. By the time it gets to the destination, all the bottom loads of stock is damaged and your stock is wasted. And there were little mistakes that I learned.
You just take for granted.
You have to learn as you go along, right? That I was sending these hand sanitizers out. They look perfect in these boxes. I was buying these boxes. They look great. But actually, because they weren't fit perfectly and they weren't the right structure and I didn't palletize it correct, like the right weight and stuff, that they were getting there and they were crushing the bottom. So all the hand sanitizer was shooting out of the bottom. So it was arriving a mess and it was so expensive. Yeah, it's like pure alcohol.
It's expensive mistakes to make, isn't
it? Yeah,
I
made so many mistakes. And, you know, bottles breaking. People stole so much hand sanitizer at that time as well. So then we had to black wrap. So there's loads of things, like wrap it in black tape rather than clear tape, so people couldn't see what they... It was, because everyone wanted hand sanitizer, right? I had to learn a lot quickly. And also I knew nothing about content creation, social media. I think that luckily I was friends with people within June who were the marketeers and social team. And they taught me like things here and there. And I think I modeled for them on a few shoots. So I'd briefly seen things and they asked me to take photos. They wanted like behind the scenes buyer content or whatever. But I had no it. So I had to completely learn how to like use Instagram and TikTok because I couldn't afford to employ someone to do that at that time. So yeah, I'd say that my background really helped in the areas that I probably wouldn't have been able to succeed without it. And then I learned other things as fast as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do have a really good support network. Obviously, my dad has two very successful businesses. But I'd say he's more of like a mental support, because running a business, right, is pressurizing. Mm-hmm. And half the time you think, why the hell did I do this? I want to give up. There's no end. It's all going to be taken away from me. All these thoughts and feelings and pressure. I don't think anyone really talks about enough.
No.
But like the crippling pressure, sometimes it's so debilitating. Like 2 weeks ago, I literally lay on my daughter's playroom floor for like 3 hours because I was like, oh my God, I've made a really bad mistake, or someone in my team's made a bad mistake and I can't see a way out of this one. What am I going to do? This is such a waste of money. Like no one talks about those moments. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone talks about, oh, we've reached 400,000 followers. We're amazing. Not the fact that I was crying for 2 hours because, okay, I don't really cry, but you know, I was like...
I'd love if you'd done that in your daughter's playground. Like you nearly said playground and like in front of all the moms and dads. And they'd be like, Laura, are you okay?
No, I'm not okay. My mum came in and she was like, are you good now? And I was just like sitting on me and I was like, please take her. Mum. And she was like, okay, I will like remove and do you want to talk about it? I was like, just leave me. I'm good. I just need some tequila and I'll be good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Arabelle. She is an absolute cutie.
Thank you.
You've just shown me a picture of a Halloween outfit and it's like the cutest little thing in the world.
Yeah.
But like, I can't believe that you do all of this. You have like a team of like 20 at this moment in time and you've got a young daughter as well.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that, how you kind of juggle mum life, business life. I know it's really annoying because men don't get asked this question like ever, but I actually did ask it to our last guest who was also a parent, Jordan from the side, he manages the Sidemen, and I made sure I asked it to a male because I think it's different and it's nice to get different perspectives. Don't worry, I'm not asking you this just because you're a woman, because I do ask it to every parent.
But no, but I want to talk about it. Like there's other mums out there that are, you know, like juggling, and it's like good to kind of have perspective, right? And everyone say how hard it is.
Yeah.
It's tough. I think for me, like I've always wanted to have a career. And, you know, when I was younger, I was like, I'm going to be the editor of Vogue. And I always had like this envision of what my career was, and it's always changed and it's evolved. And, you know, being a CEO, it's kind of, it's the dream job. I don't think of any other career that I'd want to be doing. Maybe less pressure, but you know, but I want to be that person. But also I have like a really loving, nurturing side of myself, and I've always wanted to be a mum. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to be both, I'd say. You know, I've got an opportunity on Saturday to talk to 500 creators at TikTok HQ, but I'm also being away from her today. I'm going away from her Thursday. I'm doing another creator thing. And it's really hard to kind of divvy up my time. And I'm a single parent co-parenting now as well. So managing that, it's just, there is so many, I think, in my personal life as well as business life, there's so many spinning plates all the time. And it's just trying to navigate it all to just like split it all up perfectly, if that makes sense. Because I will feel guilty about something no matter what. Yeah. I'll be like, right, okay, so I haven't put enough time into me this week because I need that. You know, there was a long period of time where Laura Mallows didn't exist. It was just Mallows Beauty. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I was becoming not unhappy, like, yeah, slightly unhappy, I'd say, and not recognizing myself. So it's really important that, and I'm like making sure now that I'm saying no and putting myself forward. You know, I was like feeling guilty for turning my phone off at 8 o'clock at night and going on the treadmill for an hour and not doing my emails. And I'm like, no. You are allowed an hour after 8 o'clock to put your phone down and say no. Yeah. No one else can ring you. You're not going to make me feel guilty because, yeah, okay, this is my business, I own it, but I'm not answering a call at 8 o'clock at night because I need me time and I need to perform tomorrow and I want to feel good about myself. So it's like really hard to like divvy up that, spend time with Arabelle because I really want to spend time with her and I love her and she's incredible and gorgeous and she's growing up so quickly and I've already had so much time taken away from her, and business, because without me, business always, something always goes wrong and it always starts underperforming. So I have to be on top notch, running full speed. So no matter what, I'm always going to feel guilty about one of those areas being completely neglected.
Mm-hmm. Are you feeling a little overwhelmed right now? Would it help to speak to someone? Well, this is just a brief pause to tell you about our newest pay partner, BetterHelp. BetterHelp is an app I've often used in the past to speak with credentialed therapists to help me deal with the highs and lows of my 20s. Starting therapy can be hard. I couldn't find the right therapist for me in my area and found the face-to-face interaction of therapy uncomfortable. What I love about BetterHelp is if the therapist you're first matched with doesn't feel like a right fit, which can be common when you're starting therapy, you can easily switch to a new therapist at no additional cost. If you're looking for affordable therapy, check out BetterHelp. And as a thank you for listening, we have a special link that gets you 10% off your first month. Click the link in the description or visit betterhelp.com/talk20s.
Actually, someone said to me last night, one of my close friends said to me last night, that time is one of the most important things and precious things in life. And it kind of like hit me because I was like, oh my God, yeah. Like money doesn't, like money, you can always make more money, right? But time you can't make more of. It's like—
time is the most expensive thing.
You can be the richest person in the world and you can't buy more time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like— that kind of hit me because I think that is the thing that I'm poorest in, is time. And yeah, it's tough to navigate, I would say. I am, again, extremely lucky that I've got such a good support network. My mum and dad are amazing. They drop everything to pick up Arabelle. You know, I'm like, right, I'm doing a podcast today. And they're like, yeah, no worries, we'll pick her up from nursery. And Saturday, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to go to London. And, you know, but then I also need, because it's work, right? I also want to have Saturday night off.
Yeah.
So they'll also help me. So yeah, my mum is amazing. She literally is the most selfless person I know in existence. So I'm very, very fortunate to have such a good support network around me. Without them, I wouldn't be where I am, 100%. And I wouldn't be able to do what I have to do. I'd have to say no to half the things, probably be very, very burnt out. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that like you didn't get much of a maternity leave because you're a business owner.
Yes.
And how tough that was for you when we were catching up before the podcast. If you could look back at that time and like do anything a little bit differently, like what would you have done?
Yeah. So I had 3 weeks maternity leave. I do this often, right? Even though I've been burnt quite a few times by trusting the wrong people, I still trust. Because I don't want to live a life where I'm not trusting people. So I think like no matter what, I'm always going to be that person. I'm a trusting person. So that's just what I'm going to do. And I left the business with people that I did trust. And there was a couple of agencies that we were working with, an Amazon one and another agency. And they spent a lot of money on ads that weren't profitable. And we nearly lost the business because I was lit for literally 3 weeks. I came back and I was like, cool, well, you've just spent One, you've lost money on my ads, but also I've got all my overheads to pay for. So I think when you're talking to ads agencies, they're like, well, for example, easy numbers, okay, so we got 50K revenue for you, but we only spent 30K ads. That must be good, right? Because we're doing more sales than ads. And you're like, no, let's break it down. You know, it's 50K, you take off the VAT, you take off the cost of goods, shipping, picking and packing, and then you take off ad spend. I've already lost, God, I don't know what, 20K. And then we take off all of my overheads, my warehouse costs, everything, salaries, whatever. It's a massive loss, right? And I think there was a few things that kind of bubbled to the surface. I think we'd been on Amazon and testing things, and you know, all these, they always send you these fantastic reports. You're making this much profit, this much ROAS, blah, 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 blah. But not really paying attention to the costs. And I think Amazon lost us 16 grand. And then, it was honestly a mess. And I was like, oh my, I'm going to lose my business. I'm going to be bankrupt at 30 with a 3-week-old baby. Oh my fucking God. So I was like, I have no choice. I'm going to have to go back to work. And I haven't really spoken about it until this moment because I didn't want to seem like I was failing. I didn't want people to think that they couldn't trust us. I mean, that was like over 2 years ago now, but it will be 2 years in January. Mm-hmm. And I had a call from TikTok actually, and they were like, so I went back to work and I was like, right, what are we going to do? Like, we just have to post those videos and posters of Instagram, post them, sell, and we'll get out of this hole, you know, this whatever, 100 grand hole or whatever that we got in, or 70 grand hole. It was a massive hole.
Sounds like a big hole.
It was a big hole for us then, right? Yeah. Because we were so small. Yeah. So like, okay, numbers like mean nothing really because it's all relative to what you were. But that was a big number for us at that point. And obviously I'd worked so hard all year and... Mm-hmm. We'd been profitable and then we suddenly weren't. It was like a shock. You know, when I went out on maternity leave, we'd had our best 2 ever months in business. I was like, oh my God, we're done.
Going out on a high.
I was literally, I was like, cool, I can have 2 months off, you know? Like, I think I was in labor emailing, you know, I was in it. But I did take 2 weeks off. Where I was like, I'm just going to go into the bubble. But so where was I? What was I saying?
You got into a 70K hole.
Yes. And I was like, what am I going to do? TikTok rung. They were like, we have this thing called like TikTok Shop. You go live. One of our other merchants made like 10K in a month. And I was like, oh, that's good. Like extra 10K revenue on top of... It's like a little, that's good. Okay, fine, I'll do it. So I went live from like 2 hours and I think in my first live I did 5K. So I was like, wow, there's something in this. Mm-hmm. I've never felt so good. Obviously after all the shit that happened, it was like literally a week or so later that I did that live. And I was like, oh my God, amazing. We made 5K.
You were 3 weeks postpartum at this point.
Like I think I was, by the time I went live and it'll be set up maybe 4 or 5 weeks postpartum. Wow. And that point in life, you don't want anyone to see you. You just want to be sit at home with your newborn, not move off the sofa. Like your body hurts. Yeah. I mean, you're not want to be. And I was like on live in front of thousands of people. And I remember sitting there being like, my boobs are like, they're going to burst. mm-hmm. And it was, lives were amazing for us. They got us out of that hole very, very quickly. Some of my lives have done insane. I've done 30K in one live. So lives have been amazing. They've just grown and grown and grown and grown for us. It was the terrifying time. And I think it was tough. The girls would come to my house at 9 in the morning, they'd work 8 hours. And I remember just thinking, oh my God, I want everyone to go. I don't know what to do with this little thing. Like she was allergic to everything. So throwing everything up. So I was like on this really super strict diet where I couldn't eat anything, couldn't drink coffee. So I was exhausted. Every time I put it down, she would scream, but they were there. So she was stuck to me. I was like on meetings and then she'd throw up all over me because I'd eaten something else that she was allergic to. So I'd be like on meetings with TikTok, covered in sick milk coming out on my boobs. My whole team looking at me like, I'm thinking, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to pay these people's salaries. What's going on with my life? You know, and then having to then go and do a 2 or 3 hour live in a freezing cold warehouse, then come home and breastfeed all night and have like an hour or two sleep and then wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I did have an amazing team and a someone who worked for me at the time, doesn't work for me now, was an incredible support and never judged me when she came to the house when I was covered in sick and mm-hmm. wasn't really didn't really like babies and did whatever she could to, you know, pass me a nappy or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think it was so overwhelming as well because I was on all these NCT groups and I felt so, it was stolen, this time was stolen from me. And mm-hmm. I'd go to a, like I said, like a sensory class and be everyone would be there talking about bubbles and like what nappies they were using and milk. And I was had my phone flashing next to me and I just thought, I'm going to have a mental breakdown. I'm like, I want to be here. I deserve this. Mm-hmm. But also I know that this hasn't arrived into the warehouse. This is a disaster. Yeah. I've got to go live tonight. My boobs hurt, you know? So yeah, it was a really tricky time. But
you haven't had a mental breakdown. Like,
yeah.
Testament to you because I'm sat here thinking, it sounds stressful, but like,
yeah.
If Laura can do it and still, but that's the thing. I think you are setting setting the way or paving the way for like other people to be like, I can be a businesswoman and I can be a mum. And and the two like can work. And I know it sounds super stressful, but like you are in a place now where it's a bit more balanced and it's never going to be perfect. No one's parenting experience, I don't think, is perfect anyway. Yeah. They just aren't honest about it.
Yeah. I think you've got to make it work for you, right? I think there's this idea of what a mum is like driving around in, I don't know, like if someone said to me like, oh, I'm driving around in my, someone the other day was like driving around in my like Defender, da, 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 da. And I was like, no, like, in your like active wear, like you have this vision of what you want to be as a mum when you're like whatever 30. It's not like that. I had a vision of what I was gonna be like when I was 30. I thought Arabelle was gonna have all home cooked meals and stuff, and I was like on a Zoom call doing home cooked meals, her screaming at me, and I was like, right, enough is enough. Do you know what? It's okay to buy a Deliciously Ella pouch. You know, that's what you're gonna eat right now. Yeah. Because actually, you know, there's so much going on, and I think like you just have to be like, okay, maybe it wasn't what I envisioned it's going to be, but I'm going to make it work for me. And I think as soon as I let go of that pressure and I didn't go to the sensory classes, I stopped replying to my NCT group. They're a lovely group, bunch of girls, but they were making me feel very left out, not intentionally, but because they were all talking about stuff that I couldn't have the mental capacity to talk about, that I made my own way of being a mum, that I actually started enjoying it. I wasn't enjoying it until then. Mm-hmm. I was feeling shit that I wasn't that mum, and I was feeling shit that I wasn't that business owner. And I was, you know, putting so much pressure on myself. And it was only when I was like, do you know what? Like, it's okay. My mum's going to take Arabelle for 3 hours. And that doesn't mean I'm a bad mum, mm-hmm. but that means I'm a better business owner. And then I miss her and I go with her and I'm a better mum then. And I'm still learning. Like, we're still learning every day, right? Mm-hmm. I'll still have a Friday. Like, I'm going to have Fridays off with her and I'll still have a Friday off. And I'm like, I've answered the phone all day. But that's my normal. And, you know, like, I'm trying to build something for her and I'm doing it for me. Like, I'm a person too. And I think my mum is the best mum in the world. Like I said, so selfless, and she would have dropped everything for me and Reese. And I had compare myself to her quite a lot. But like, I'm Laura Mallows, and this is how I'm being a mum. And you know, I'm proud of myself. You know, but I've only now I've found my own strange, weird path there. So I think we all have to find a path that works for us and forget about that vision of who you thought you were going to be a mum, or thought your career path was going to be, or thought your life was going to be. You know, even if you're listening to this and you're not a parent, or you couldn't be a parent, or you don't want to be a parent, or whatever, you know, like, it doesn't matter whatever preconceptions of life have been pushed on you. Like, you have one life. Like you said, time is so precious, and live exactly how you want to live, because you'll only regret it if you aren't true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And you'll look back and think, oh, I wish I'd have given myself an easier time. I wish I'd just told everyone to go home. Everyone just go home and do what you want to do, because I'm just going to take 3 hours to look at my gorgeous child.
Yeah.
And then I'll be back, because we're not doing any work anyway now, because I'm just thinking, fuck off, you know? So, or mum, take her for 3 hours rather than doing everything at once. So, yeah.
Well, Laura, it's been absolutely amazing to have you on the podcast.
Sorry, I'm just like rambling.
No, I have loved listening to you, and I think so many people will get so much value out of this episode, because I think one of the things we talk about on Talk 20s a lot is kind of this idea of like having it all, and how it's definitely not achievable, like to literally have it all, but it's about finding that balance. And I feel like, you know, you are slowly navigating, finding that balance, which is really, really great to see. I have to ask you in one, like, one line, if you could look back at your 20-year-old self and give her just one piece of advice that would see her through her 20s, what would you want to say to her?
Be kinder to yourself. Like, just be kinder to yourself and learn, like, love yourself. Give yourself a break. Love yourself. Perfect is not real. And you will look back at this time and want it back. Mm-hmm. And you'll think, I wish I was just a little bit kinder to me. And love thought, that. You know, I'm a fucking cool person. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. It's been so lovely to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.